Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
Oh, yeah, there it is. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. 855-752-4842. If you want to jump in, give us a call. Last night, Johnny Lupinacci, he's back tonight, though. You know what? We handled it. I just want to say, Dr. Julian Vasquez-Helig, Dr. Laura Deinhardt, Western Michigan University, Grow Your Own Program, addressing the teacher shortage for real, actually an investment in creating teachers who, you know, live in the area who might want, or people who live in the area who might want to become a teacher, the access that they now have to a curriculum to become a teacher at Western Michigan is there. Now the funding is there for them. And on top of that, too, the modality. You don't have to sit in a classroom during the time. You can get it fully online at Western Michigan for a working adult. You're getting paid while you're doing an internship. What a great program. I said, Johnny, we featured this probably, what, a year and a half ago when we talked about the Tennessee program in Austin Peay State University. Prentice Chandler. Here we are, though, Western Michigan. Their increase in enrollment in the first iteration of this, 300 new students pursuing teaching licenses at Western Michigan University is on increase. They had 400 students to start in their regular program. When this program launched, they added another 300 new future teachers. And we were talking about the impact that that is going to have on the teacher shortage in Michigan. And wow, what a reality. But Johnny, I'm so glad you're back. And I'm not back. Only I'm you back, but it's Wednesday night. It's Educators Amplified in the house. And they're both in the house tonight, too. Woo-hoo. Teacher Joanna, Teacher Hallie. Man, we are back together again, back in the saddle. Aerosmith. Anybody remembers that tune? You know, back in the saddle again. All right. Teacher Joanna, Teacher Hallie, welcome back. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing all right. I'm feeling happy and relieved today. I think I shared with you guys our news about Say Yes to MPS passing. So I am happy and relieved, and yet I have complicated feelings about it. I mean, oh my gosh, I was telling Hallie, like, the lead up to an election like that, I was just like in such anxiety, and I really don't have great coping. You know, I'll be like, stay away from the information. No, go into the information. But overall, I'm happy, relieved. And I'll say what I've been saying to my coworkers to keep a, you know, as we're marching towards this, is that I believe in the ground game. I believe in the ground game. They had the money. We have the people. And I believed in our ground game.
Nice. Teacher Hallie, how about you?
Wow. She's so good at being inspiring. You know, I'm ebb and flowing because, right, I'm post election day as well. And because I choose to live in a very red area of Wisconsin, nobody I voted for won. So I ebb and flow as far as some moments. I'm like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen to public education? What's going to happen to our schools? You know, and then the next minute I'm like, oh my gosh, but I love the teachers. My children seem happy. You know, I see children laughing and being okay, you know, so I'm up and down. But I do truly see this creeping, very slow flow of people starting to understand what's going on. It's just, I would love to put a little chutzpah in.
Little juice. Put a little juice in there. So let's just, you know, recap for anybody, listeners joining us too. Hey, in fact, listeners, if you're listening, if you want to talk, give us a call. 855-752-4842 is the number. It is Educators Amplified Wednesday. Teacher Joanna, Teacher Hallie in the house. Yes, yesterday, all across Wisconsin, but in Milwaukee, big win. We were doing this. We had been advocating Say Yes to MPS, Milwaukee Public Schools referendum. It's official at this point, Teacher Joanna, that the referendum has. Okay, because I saw early in the morning they were going, well, there's still some absentee ballots out there that they're waiting for. But at this point, MPS can declare a victory. You're talking about mixed feelings. We'll talk a little bit about that also to kind of go like, yeah. The other thing, though, too, for anybody else all through Wisconsin, there were, 89 referendums across the entire state yesterday. Hallie, is that true or am I off on that number?
It could be. I thought it was 91.
So. Okay, I thought it was 91, too, and then I remember somebody correcting me to 89. So, you know what? Somewhere
there was a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Around 90.
Okay, around 90 would be, you know, and so if you're another person out there, referendum passed, give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. Referendum didn't pass. We'd like to hear from you also. Johnny Lupinacci, though, so what do you think here? Say yes to MPS.
Well, I mean, I'm stoked. We've been, you know, talking about the importance of referendums and why they have, why they have to be in place to begin with and how important they are to getting funds into our public schools and supporting teachers and, you know, helping to bring that change that we're talking about here. It starts with proper funding. I'm trying to look up exactly. I mean, these were close, right? So I'm feeling the inspiration of Joanna. I love it. Teacher Joanna, believe in the ground game. I believe in the ground game, but I also feel the creep Teacher Hallie's talking about, right? Like, it's so present. This is a no brainer. This is a slam dunk. If you care about kids, you care about schools, say yes to MPS. Just enough people said yes to MPS, which is good, but just enough, right? It was close.
Yeah, it was.
A whole lot of conversation for all of us. And, you know, most of our callers are on the same page we're on, but for everyone listening out there to be having about, oof, guys, this is a close one. Yeah. And for lots of parts of the state of Wisconsin, I'm looking at here, you know, it was close or it didn't go so well.
Yeah.
And when it doesn't go well and a referendum doesn't pass, children in schools and communities in general suffer, right? And so we're really voting on that when we do this. And so, I mean, I'm mixed. I'm mixed today about things. And so, hey, we got a text, though, from Mark. You see that?
You see that, Mark, man? He got my Aerosmith. Loving it, though. Made him think about the quote, doing all right, getting good grades, future so bright, gotta wear shades. Yeah. A little bit of classic. Right? Teacher Hallie's like, you guys are weird, man. I can see it. I can see it all over her face. People are going, what do you mean you see it? It's radio. How can you see? Hey, if you're on the YouTube, on the Twitter, or on the Facebook, you can see us right now. So jump in there, man. Look at it. I tell you what, it's a sight. I don't know if it's a beautiful sight or part of it's beautiful, but the other, I don't know. If you're watching it, the top half of this video is a bit disturbing. The bottom half, much better to do.
Yeah,
busted pencils. Fully
sunshine to the bunch.
Yeah, fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. Wednesday educators amplified in the house. Teacher Joanna, Teacher Hallie. The number's 855-752-4842. And yeah, referendums all across Wisconsin. Some passed, some didn't. But the big MPS, Milwaukee Public Schools, yes, they did pass. And Joanna, you were talking about some mixed feelings, though. I mean, we're happy. Explain that a little bit to me. Help me understand.
Well, my mixed feelings are that it did pass, as they describe, as narrowly. And so, and when I think back to, well, like I said, I went and did doors. And when I did doors, people were very supportive. But then there's obviously a group of people who aren't, or even, I guess this, not even just people aren't. I am worried again that they need to hear Johnny's constant lecture on why you have one in the first place, because the questions can be like, well, what do they need the money for? Why? What do they want? You know, so it's like almost like a kid. It can be sound like a kid asking for some extravagant present and be like, well, why do they want that? Aren't they happy with the things that they have? And so, to me, the question shouldn't be like, what do they want or what are they going to do with it? It needs to be more like, why is this continuing to happen? Why do we consistently hear that schools need money? Why do we consistently hear that students don't have what they need? Why do we consistently hear that people aren't staying in the profession? And so those are some deeper questions that this next round, we've got to get at that, you know? So that's why my feelings are conflicted, because it was close. And because then that opposition is not going away, right? This has been consistent in my life since definitely Act 10 here in Wisconsin, that it has been just a really consistent march toward privatizations. And so I feel like that should be the question. I appreciate it. You know, again, I was all with it, that it's like, say yes to MPS. But the question really is, do you believe public schools should exist in your community?
Man, what it is. There it is, right there, Johnny.
And across the state, this was close everywhere. If there's only a couple of referendums on the ballot here that it's, you know, one-sided. And in those places, it was really one-sided. No, I know.
In
two of those elections, the rest were all very close, like within, you know, 5 or 6 percentage points is of passing or failing.
You look at that, though, too, and you think about this. And I was thinking, John, you really talked about the mixed feelings there and explaining that. I was wondering if you were thinking about going the reality of going, why do we even need to go to referendum in the first place, right? Yeah, I mean, and we have been talking about that for so long. It's just like, you know, in a way, you can say, you know, why are the property owners, the taxpayers of all of these areas, the ones who have to now kick in the extra money to do this? Well, you know, how did we get to this position? And we've been talking about this time and time again because of an active defunding of public schools, as you said, Joanna, over since Act 10. But let's be honest, it has been happening and happening way before that. Active defunding of public schools to the point where it's like, okay, and then the laws are created so that the legislature can say, well, if you want any extra money, you're going to have to go back to the voters to ask their permission. Well, wait a minute. Why aren't we getting the money we're supposed to be getting anyway? That's the question. And I want to put that out there. The number's 855-752-4842. Yeah, we create a scarcity when, hey, guess what? There are billions, billions right now in reserve. What's going on? Busted pencils, give us a call when we get back.
Yep.
There it is. Johnny Lupinacci's excited coming into this one. Busted pencils. Educated educators talking education. Fully leaded. Yeah, fully leaded education talk. That's what we do here every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Civic Media, Busted Pencils. Wednesdays, though, Educators Amplified in the house. Teacher Joanna, Teacher Hallie. Bringing it, Sharon, you know, we're doing a little reflection or soul searching or commiserating, just going celebrating, though, let's be honest, celebrating the fact that it did pass. Saying yes to MPS did happen. So voters in the Milwaukee area listening, thank you out there for making sure, because as we said, this was not an extra give the teachers a little something more, a little bit. This was for funding for the essentials to keep the lights on. And there we go. Caller, Dr. Joanne is on the line. Joanne, how are you, our friend?
I'm sharing in your joy right now, but I just have a suggestion. When there's a big bridge project or a big highway project, very often there's a sign saying this bridge or this highway was built with certain funds. I was just wondering, you know, is there a way to reflect in the future that this referendum helped to fix the lights in a big auditorium, or this referendum helped to hire 3 more teachers, maybe put a big sign so people, the voters, know that there's actual results from what they voted for?
I love that. I love that, Dr. Joanne. Thanks for bringing that up, because how great would it be to announce this football game on Friday night is brought to you by the voters of, you know, that voted yes to MPS, or just making it clear that every time you drive past a public school and you see a sign, right, and you see kids out playing on the playground, or you have to slow down extra slow to go past that school, that school's open because the voters passed the referendum. That's how really, I mean, Teacher Joanna put in the chat, right? It's this mixed feeling after a referendum, because it's celebratory and it's also the commiserating around, how did we get here to where we have, we've, you know, this orchestrated scarcity where we've underfunded so much that, that we have to go out and ask local folks for increased taxes in order just to keep things going, right? That's intentional. That is by design. And that puts all kinds of extra stress on those hundreds of teachers, Tim, that you were talking about. Like, this is not different than what's happening in Kalamazoo or other places in Michigan, right. Wisconsin. I mean, Wisconsin is a canary in the coal mine for things happening all around the country, right? And so, you know, the conditions for teachers are really not good, right? And that means also conditions for learners are not good. And they're made better because teacher on the backs and the labor of teachers, right? And so it's a mixed bag. We're like, yay, say yes to MPS pass. Thank goodness, right? Let's celebrate every time we see a public school, because that is due to, in part, the fact that voters voted yes on MPS, or the, you know, referendums passed where they passed. I love Dr. Joanne's idea too about celebrating it and making it well known.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Joanne, you like that? I could see you smiling as Joanne was talking.
Yeah. Well, because I think that is it. I don't think we do. I love the suggestion. And right, we don't do enough of acknowledging, and in this way, in a positive way, of what's really going on. And so people aren't aware. Like, right, I'm not sitting here thinking like people aren't aware because they're like dumb. I don't think that at all. I think it's related to the things that Joanne suggested, that we don't make it known. It's all kind of like taken for granted. And so it was a great suggestion. I also think, though, that this topic itself kind of weaves its way back to what you said you guys were talking about last night about programs to bring teachers in. I focus on like, how do you get people to stay? And when you think about this, like if every year you're hanging by a thread and you need some referendum, or I'm telling you, there is stress and panic. Like Monday and Tuesday in MPS was stressful, you know, and quiet. You know, it's like you're all just like, and then, you know, so that really contributes to the conditions that new people are going to be coming into. So there's a lot of reasons why we got to get this all right.
Yeah, we definitely have to. Teacher Hallie, got the look of concern across your face there. I got, you know, hey, I just got to make sure that everybody, you know, the listeners that are truly listening, I got to describe what I see.
Okay, you guys are having such a great conversation. Honestly, I have so many thoughts about, right, the whole like, how do you retain teachers? Like, I totally am down for what, like, what was it? Western Michigan is doing. And I'm like, I feel like I went through like this really great, you know, teacher prep program in college. And I remember my professor saying, people will not be talking like we're teaching you right now. So you have to go in there and be bold. And I didn't comprehend it at the time, but now I'm like, well, that was, my entire career was defending what my teacher prep was. But and like that was true education, because as a teacher, when I went into the profession, I was like, what are we doing? As far as like, it was just so dictated by a textbook or so dictated by a test. So I'm thinking about that. And at the same time, I was trying to add up how much money every school was doing for the referendum, because I wanted to figure out like how much money is the state for schools mm-hmm. asking for in relation to like how much money the state has and hasn't given. So that's
doing the math,
Joanna.
Yeah, I think WPEN has that number. It's okay. Less than $6 billion for sure. You know what I mean? Ooh, it's like yeah. It was like every referendum, yes, wish could have been fulfilled just through proper state funding.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I don't have the exact number.
But I mean, that's it too, right? Is to realize there wasn't really a need for any referendum in the state, because the responsibility of the elected officials in representing the communities and the people and the schools mm-hmm. that they represent had a responsibility and obligation to step up and do what's right, which is to fund their public schools, fund the commons, because that is what is for all of us core democratic values that we're talking about. You as a legislator, the reality that you have forced this referendum to make it look like, well, you know, the voters picked it wasn't up to us. Well, actually, it was up to you to push it to referendum because of your defunding activities and not mm-hmm. moving forward. And specifically this year in Wisconsin, realizing $6 billion in surplus and then telling the school districts of the state, no, you don't get the money you're supposed to have. That was, yeah, in fair funding court cases has been documented and demonstrated again that we actually do owe you. In fact, you know, we've been told by the Supreme Court we're supposed to fund equitably the way we're supposed to according to the law and according to the Constitution. We're not going to do that right now, though, because we're going to continue to be, you know, a holes and do what it is that we do, which is make the public look as if, you know, we're going to turn them against public schools. The reality we're moving, though, let's turn it against the politicians at this point. It's busted pencils. It's fully leaded. Man, sorry. Got on a rant there. When we come back, L.A. Tom. L.A. Tom, though.
Coming back.
Yeah, I know. We can save you. That's what we do here. Busted pencils, fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. Wednesday night, educators amplified in the house. Teacher Joanna, Teacher Hallie, celebrating the Say Yes to MPS. Although some schools, you know, some school districts in the state of Wisconsin, the voters said no. We want to come back. We'll talk more about that. But L.A. Tom is on the line. L.A. Tom, what's happening, our friend?
Hey, guys. First off, we, the people, ultimately are the government. We, the people, are ultimately the public schools. We, the people, are ultimately anything that has to do with the public. And we should be calling these things. Maybe we should start fixing the word government and calling it government schools and government you know, all the different things that are in the public sector that we all basically own. You know, or we just say we the people, whatever it is, because it's our tax dollars that are paying for it. I heard some calls today, people calling, oh, why does Milwaukee need more money? It's like, first off, these were people that weren't even calling from Milwaukee. Second off, it was they don't understand. They think that Milwaukee's just getting more and more and more money rather than the Republicans are sitting on billions of dollars that could actually help out the actual economic engine of the state of Wisconsin by actually giving money to Milwaukee the way that they should be. If you want to hold people accountable to the money that you give them, fine. But you know what? This is for the basic necessities, and it's an investment. It is. I am a small business owner. When I look at something in advertising, I look at it as a return on my investment. If I put this in, what am I getting back? And that's what we need to be looking at in terms of education. Everything that we talk about should be about a return on investment. And I'm not talking about money investment. I'm talking about a future investment. I'm talking about public safety. I'm talking about everything that we do. I mean, I have a question. Actually, it's been bugging me a lot. Do people even
go for
teach
it.
The nursery rhymes? And do people teach nursery rhymes anymore? The three little things about, you know, basically, you know, building a foundation full of bricks so the little, so the big bad wolf can't go and blow it down, and you know, the little boy that called, what was he called?
Wolf, the boy
one that kept
wolf.
On doing what George, huh?
The boy who called Wolf.
Cried Wolf,
are
you talking about?
The one that cried Wolf, the way that George war criminal Bush did. I mean, I swear to God, there were reasons that they did these nursery rhymes. And the reason they did these nursery rhymes is so people could actually learn at a child age, like Piaget would say, in the concrete. So when they got older, they would actually understand it in the abstract. And it's not that abstract.
Look at that. L.A. Tom dropping some education theorists there. Teacher Joanna, response, and then Teacher Hallie.
Well, I'm, of course, I'm dismayed to hear Tom share, you know, again, what we know exists when we're talking about the city of Milwaukee. I don't know even that we're talking about the specific issues other than the stereotype that's associated with our city. And that just made me think that when we were putting on the work, we were thinking the whole, like, we're going to focus on Milwaukee and we're going to put on the work, because a lot of the noise was from outside. And then when he was talking about nursery rhymes, honestly, I was trying to think, and I'm like, ooh, I don't know that. I don't know if that was in the Lucy Calkins reading series that, or if it's in any of the reading series that now are very limited for young people having access to. So I was more thinking about that. Hallie has younger kids. She might know.
Honestly, not that I can think. Yeah. I mean, maybe they're not telling me, but no. I mean, anything Lucy Calkins 100% does not.
But come on, little kids were doing nursery rhymes, right? I mean, we haven't cut out nursery rhymes in children's literature for little kids, have we? I mean, maybe we have in today's, you know, polarized world, because, you know, I'm sure somebody finds something offensive about naked pigs and having their houses blown down by big bad wolves. There's probably some sexual thing there that I don't see happening, that we would need to ban the three little pigs, because, yeah, I mean, I remember reading them, and for some reason, they never had clothes on. So maybe that's a real issue there. Teacher Hallie, I see you now going into the phase of going, let me think about this.
I am. But I want to say, sorry. I was going to say, though, I always really appreciate the grounding nature of L.A. Tom, and how he, you know, grounds folks back to, you know, what our democracy is really about. And so, yeah, I always appreciate his groundedness in these topics.
Hallie.
I do too. Yeah, I do too. I always love, he's got his beginning sentence. Maybe it makes me think maybe I should come up with a slogan to say before I speak. But a little bit, honestly, my youngest is in first grade, and she started school in 4K. I do not remember her doing nursery rhymes. And if I think about her school day to day, maybe they would have quote unquote allowed it in 4K, but definitely not 5K.
Johnny Lupinacci's got to look like he has a sense of this too.
I want to go upstairs and ask her.
Yeah. No, I was just kind of, I want to come back to this, like the reasons again, why, because we were talking you know, some people are upset about referendums passing. You know, we're excited about it because Milwaukee Public Schools, I mean, we have a lot of great friends teaching and doing really important work in those schools. And there's so many schools across the country and the state where there are amazing teachers doing great work despite underfunding. And that shouldn't be the case. And, you know, if we look at, you know, the teacher Joanna brought up the Wisconsin Public Education Network, you know, and they share a report about, you know, referendums. And if it, and in one of their reports they share, and it's important, it's like over the past 30 years, the state, which like historically funded public schools, has decreased their funding and really dispersed those decreases to local people. So those tax cuts that said politicians ran on, they said, hey, we're going to cut taxes, we're going to reduce your taxes. That was all smoke and mirrors. They just put it to local votes. They put each district and county into having to make up those funds somehow, because magically the cost of electricity didn't go down, the cost of feeding children didn't go down, the cost of providing health care to teachers didn't go down, right? The cost, like everything else, increased while the funding of schools went down. And I just want to point out that that's very orchestrated instability. It's not only lying to the taxpayers, you know, of the state and saying, hey, we're going to reduce your taxes. No, that cut comes from somewhere. And it came from public schools. And if we look at these reports, you know, K-12 school funding, right, they've had to make up, back in 2000, $32 million lost in those cuts. So referendums had to make up $32 million, right? In 2010, it was $180 million. They had to make up in those continued cuts. And in 2023, it's $650 million, right? That they've had to make it. So there's a pattern here that for everyone who is like, you know, who is hearing, well, we cut taxes, we reduce taxes at the state level. They really haven't. They've just put it on the local people and orchestrated instability in our schools. And LA Tom last week or so, you know, called up and he talked about the commons, and then we got kind of on that theme of the importance of common good and the commons and those non-monetized things we rely on as part of our day-to-day life in a democracy in a developed world, right? And public education ought to be part of the commons, right? But in every way, it's not. It's monetized and put on the backs of people in those communities to figure out how to make up those gaps. Okay, so instead of just having those state tax dollars go to the state and the state disperses them to the school, they reduce the amount they collect and disperse, and then it puts districts in the position of having to have these referendums in a sense, curated competition locally, where we have to then fight it out and have an election that's stressful for everybody on all sides, right? That we're like living in this sort of anxiety and instability of, are we going to have enough money? Are we going to have enough money? And I think listeners can probably relate, even if you're not in education, your local industry, if you're a local business owner, it's increasingly more common that we're functioning in a state of, I think Teacher Joanna and Teacher Hallie point this out, is dysregulation. When we are every day having to think about where's the money going to come from in order to operate, right? That is not the commons. That is forced competition. That is orchestrated instability that has health impacts, that has virile material loss for our communities. The quality of education can't be as high as we'd like it to be when everybody's stretched really thin. And that stretching isn't by like natural disaster or some natural occurrence. It's in every way, you know, curated. It's orchestrated. And it's under the guise of, we're going to reduce property taxes. Like newsflash, you know, or, you know, we're just going to have you have that money have to come from somewhere else. It still has to come from somewhere.
A curated catastrophe. I'm hearing that.
I think too, what's interesting is like, you know, looking into referendum information is pretty dry. You know what I mean? And like understanding it can feel pretty complex to just like your average taxpayer. And so I think that that's part of it too, that this is all really like confusing, dry information. And so I think people can really either simplify and, you know, like oversimplify and just be like, do you want your taxes to go up or not? You know, instead of getting into this, like the bigger picture. And as I'm really looking into all these referendum, it's reiterating what you're saying, Johnny, of like, right, the haves are asking for like updates to their brand new buildings. The have-nots are asking for like physical education, art, and music to still exist. You know, like that's what's really wild to me even about these referendums. And that's why I think like when people will be like, what is this referendum for? You know, especially for MPS, so that public education can exist. versus in other referendums, it's so that, and I'm not saying that the other schools shouldn't, but I'm like, right, we're already so separate, and this only further separates. You know what I mean?
Well, no, which goes back, which goes back to the state's constitutional obligation to fund public schools equitably, in the fact that this has been litigated all the way at the Supreme Court level to say that the state isn't living up to its constitutional duty because of, we said, the disparate funding that happens between schools that don't have and schools that already have, and saying that, you know what, actually, if we were funding Milwaukee public schools equitably, it would be in a different way. And so we create that. And, you know, Johnny's in this competition that we point out, you know, hey, the number's 855-752-4842. If you want to jump in, 855-752-4842, you know, caller, Teacher Joanna. I could see that look is like, I got something to say.
Well, or more. No, I was noticing I have an awareness of myself, and I'm like, I love Johnny's explanation and it's so good. And yet I notice that like my emotional state will kind of drift somewhere else to be like, this is where, again, I'll fall back on, like, I just want to teach. You know, I really do. Like, I'm surrounded by people who just love and care for children and are exceptionally talented and trained at helping kids develop healthfully and grow and build new skills. And so that, like, you guys, there's all the technical pieces and I understand it. And yet then there's the emotional, social piece of it too. And literally just like emotional, social, meaning like how I feel and then how I've got to go interact with everybody in my workspace, the kids, their parents, my other coworkers.
Yeah. Especially knowing that somebody is working to make that harder for you unjustly. Yeah. That's absolutely that's very devaluing. So how can we value our teachers and that great work they do?
That's the question. We're going to come back. Busted Pencils. Yeah. School's not out yet.
Not quite.
Busted Pencils. Almost, but fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. 855-752-4842. It's Educators Amplified Wednesday. They're in the house. Teacher Joanna, Teacher Hallie, say yes to MPS. It went through. It happened. Yes, the voters said yes to MPS. And man, we have been having a rich conversation just on all of the things that this has brought up. You know, lots of different angles and ways to look at this, but kind of thinking about this, I was thinking about what you said, Joanna, about, you know, hearing Johnny kind of really go into the depths of understanding this, and you kind of as a teacher and the realization of saying, man, just let me teach. It reminds me, you know, when I was doing some work on asking, and this goes back to the shortage and the quote exodus. The reality is that we don't have a teacher shortage. We have a teacher exodus. Mm-hmm. And the number one, you know, I interviewed across the country well over 400 teachers about, you know, are they planning on staying? What's going to happen? And, you know, at some point, too, I'm going to be releasing a book that's going to go over all those, those results. But I was able to sum up all of those 400 teachers said one thing simply, just let me teach. Just let me teach was the answer to would you stay? Yeah, if I was allowed to teach. Would you? Yeah, if I was allowed to focus on being an educator, if I was able to devote my soul the way I imagined when I wanted to become a teacher, could I live out that vocation of giving back, of doing better for students in front of me, for the community? That was always there. Oh, man, Jack from Merrimack's on the phone. Jack, what's happening, our friend?
Well, first thing is, I 100% agree. Just let me teach. Although I'm retired, I've been retired for about a decade, but I saw this coming. And when I did retire, about the same time Act 10 came in, what a coincidence. I noticed that a lot of things kept on happening. You know, the public schools are, it's demanded that they teach to test, that they have so many days a year of testing, sometimes both semesters that we were had our students out of our classes testing. Of course, every study I've seen shows that more classroom time equals more learning. There's with Impact 10, since teachers have no control over their conditions of employment, I saw 4 days a week where teachers were called in. Classes started at 8. They had to be in meetings at 7, which let out between 7:45 and 7:50. You barely had time to get to class, much less. So if you wanted to actually teach and prepare for your teaching, you had to be in 6:30. I was in the lab at 6:30 anyway regularly because I taught sciences, but not everybody did that. Not everybody made that choice. But the thing that really galls me about this whole thing, there is money there. You've already covered that. What really hacks me off is the unreasonable dichotomy between giving away for welfare $3,000 a student to private and parochial schools. And I taught in private and parochial schools as well, but mostly in public. Giving away $3,000 per student, but then saying, oh, if you will tax yourselves more, you can then get $300 per student more in funding. That to me is just an ultimate outrage. Somebody really should take that to court and point out that you talk about unequal. I mean, equal, what was it? Equal but separate is inherently unequal. And boy, it sure is in this case.
It absolutely is, Jack. Man, I tell you right there, you know, dropping it's like the reality of where we should be thinking about this. And again, I'll refer to Teacher Joanna because I can see her and I can see that look.
Well, it's always great when you have a fellow educator to relate with. So I appreciate Jack from Merrimack calling in and sharing that. And that just, though, twisted my mind back to, again, where we've been weaving in and out of this conversation about he described conditions for teachers, right? And this idea of having to be there early and your time, you know, and you're not compensated for that and that you really don't have time to adequately prepare. And it's part of that orchestrated chaos, honestly, I think that Johnny talks about. That's a whole nother part of it, of like how the job, what the job has become. So, I was just really thinking about that. And like, I appreciate Jack sharing, because anytime we get out the reality, it helps people have a better awareness and deeper understanding.
Thank you, Jack, for being a teacher and a caller and a listener. For listeners, Jack referred to Act 10. 2011, which severely limited collective bargaining for teachers, for public employees. And so, you know, there's a big loss.
Huge. And I remember that. I got to say, you know, well, no, I won't say that, but a lot of what happened with Act 10 actually did generate the fact that we actually have busted pencils right now because of where that was. And I was in Pennsylvania at the time, but watching that happen, I was doing some commentary at the time on local radio, and I had a great friend, I still have a great friend in the Wisconsin area, who was doing some radio, and he was like, man, you want to do some commenting on what's happening up here in Wisconsin with the Act 10? And I did some commenting, with local radio there at Wisconsin at the time. And that actually led into, you know, how I ended up in Wisconsin and how Busted Pencils was born. So I don't want to say Act 10 gave us Busted
Silver
Pencils.
Lining. Yeah,
no. I know. Right. Because, but, you know, hey, it will
but
take
the importance, you know, Tim, of taking on that role of opening up conversation about these, like Teacher Joanna said, creating a space, you know, and stewarding the space where a teacher can call up and say, here's what's happening. Here's what I experienced as an educator who wants to teach, who's highly qualified, you know, by all standards, a great teacher in our schools. And here's what my work experience was like. Here's the loss that our collective community of teachers experience when things like Act 10 went into motion.
Yeah. I want to offer too, like, I just appreciate that we get to be here once a week too, because Educators Amplified, that is really what it is about that emotional piece. I don't remember Act 10 as stripping away like my collective bargaining. I remember the emotional like PTSD that I have from it. And year after year since then. And then these referendums, the emotional hits that we take in our profession.
And that is why we have busted. And guess what? Busted Pencils, hopefully the antidote or some type of relief of that PTSD. Busted Pencils, Educators Amplified, Teacher Joanna, Teacher Hallie, thank you so much. Tomorrow, Thursday, Martin Atkins, post.